The Monologue.
Early this morning, the Biden administration met with some leaders in New York, law enforcement officials, to finally talk about the crime surge. The crime surge that previously they told us wasn't actually occurring. And then they said, well, it was kind of occurring, but it's not that big of a deal because crime overall is down. And then finally they just gave in and said, okay, we can no longer gaslight on this. We can't tell you one thing when you very clearly are experiencing the truth. So he meets with Mayor Eric Adams. He meets with these officers, and he's got his plan in place to stop the flow of guns coming into the state and the city, really. And there wasn't really anything all that new about what came out of today's meeting. I mean, it kind of followed up on this announcement he made in June of last year. Same thing. We're going to stop the flow of firearms. We're going to support local law enforcement. We're going to push for more background checks. And we keep getting this sort of nebulous, I'm going to see what I can do with executive decision. We're not yet ready to announce it, but it's coming. But we know that what he's going to do won't actually address the problem. This whole idea of just getting the guns off of the streets. What he's talking about when he mentions the Second Amendment, we played the audio a little bit earlier. He said that no amendment is absolute. That's not totally true, but it's mostly true. There are no absolutes. But when you're talking about the Second Amendment at all in a conversation about the rise in crime, that indicates to me you're not aware of what's the underlying cause of this issue, which isn't guns. It's not the gun, law-abiding gun owners. It's not that. It's the gang members. It's the other petty criminals who are getting guns illegally. And they're not going into a gun show and getting these weapons. Many times they're stealing them. Many times they're buying them on the black market and they're stolen. And all this stuff, you know, we're going to have to go after extended magazines. But that's not responsible for the gun violence that we're seeing. He makes no mention of the policies that are saying we're not going to punish bad guys. We're going to continue to put them out on the streets and give them endless chances. None of that. And he gets away with it because he has some folks out there who are in positions of influence over uninformed people who watch them. And they hear things like this dumpster fire position from Sonny Hostin, TV's dumbest lawyer, from The View.
You know, I think that what's interesting to me is New York City has one of the largest budgets for our police department. $10 billion. It was actually $9.9 billion in 2021. Uh-huh. I mean, that's bigger than the GDP of some small countries, right? Oh, yeah. So it's not about funding. It's not about the fact that police don't have enough funding. But what I do think that's interesting is that the conversation about a rise in crime, about a rise in gun crime, just never seems to include the unfettered access to guns right. in this country. And that is because Republicans don't find it politically expedient.
So Republicans providing unfettered access to guns is why gang members are getting guns. Of course, Republicans don't believe in unfettered access to guns. Republicans back, for example, background checks. But that she's trying to put this on Republicans is a major red flag to anyone who's wondering whether or not an idea that's being expressed is being done in good or bad faith. Obviously, this is bad faith. But she's the same thing. You having an access to any access to weapons to use for self-defense or sport or for whatever reason, you're not the one committing the crimes. You're not the ones committing drive-by shootings. You're not the ones who are murdering children in the streets of Chicago. You can have all the gun laws in the world. You can make them the most stringent like they have in Chicago. And the problem will still exist because the gangs still exist, because we're not putting them in jail where they belong. I'm all for restorative justice in cases where they're nonviolent, talking about young people are on the wrong track. These folks are way off that path. They're killing people, and we're not punishing them, and then we're pretending, oh, I don't know why there's crime.
The interview.
Well, if that red wave actually materializes in the midterms, what does Kevin McCarthy have in store for the Congress and really for the Biden administration? There's an exclusive story out by Henry Rogers. He's the senior congressional correspondent for the Daily Caller, and he joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jason. I really appreciate it.
What'd you find out?
So, I got to talk to McCarthy and his team, essentially, and they gave me a real breakdown of what, Republicans would do if he were Speaker, if they get the House back and he gets elected as Speaker, his plans. I mean, essentially, he would go after Biden's Department of Justice. He'd go after Department of Education, and he'd be hitting his Those are just some of the prime targets. But if you read the article in the Daily Caller, I really break down a bunch of issues like the border crisis, mm-hmm. what he plans on doing, how he plans on investigating. So, there's such a fluid list here. But this is one interesting thing I wanted to bring up, Jason, is I was just at an event last night with Congressman Chip Roy. And, I asked him a question on the record, obviously, and I said, Congressman, what you're saying tonight and all the policies that you've just named are basically identical to the list that I just received exclusively from Kevin McCarthy's office. So would you support him as Speaker? And his answer was, basically a dodge. And so that kind of tells you where Republicans are right now, is Republicans aren't really even ready to support McCarthy as a leader yet. So we might be jumping the gun on this one. Obviously, he is the favorite. He is the key fundraiser. But at the end of the day, I do think that there is a chance that he will face challengers. And we'll see what happens with that.
But isn't that normal, Henry? I mean, it's not like he hasn't been challenged before, and Nancy Pelosi has been challenged from her role as well. And usually you have, some of the caucus members, the Freedom Caucus in this case, might step up. But for the most part, it always kind of seems like there's a lot of talk about it, and then it never goes anywhere. Is this time different that you think that maybe there is an appetite for a new leader?
Well, I think that, this is the thing. We've seen Republicans tank and do nothing with their leadership in the past, right? They have the House, they have the Senate, they have the presidency, and nothing gets done. So, I don't know who needs to be in charge, but I think whoever does needs to make that point clear that, this time we're not messing around, because it's probably the last chance Republicans have to really keep things going the way to change things in Washington, D.C. So, I really think that whoever gets that role, like, for example, what Chip Roy told me yesterday, he said, the average person doesn't really care who the leader is. And, I kind of wanted to push back on that point because, the next leader of the House of Representatives, if it's the Republicans, it's going to be a very substantial role.
Yeah.
They can't just put their feet back and do nothing. So, it's a very interesting story. I recommend everybody read it on the Daily Caller just because there's so many mm-hmm. points and interesting directions and investigations that he really wants to target and good oversight.
Yeah, it's available right now at dailycaller.com. I've also got it up on my Twitter feed if you guys want to check it out. At the same time, let's say it stays the same, that it's Speaker McCarthy after what we hope to be a red wave. How do the Republicans make sure that whatever they end up doing as far as these investigations doesn't become basically a show trial like the January 6th commission has become? Because, even if people were interested in that, it's been handled in such a way, I think most people kind of just don't care.
Right. And I totally agree with you on that. I don't think the average voter does care very much about oversight. To be completely honest, even on specific issues,
mm-hmm.
They care more about their how much their gas costs, how much their groceries cost, what's going on at their schools, how the school boards are being, what's going on with the DAs, and all of the stuff that's going on in the country. What's the border crisis? That's what I think the average voter cares about. So I think that's a very good question, and we'll see what Republicans want to do. I feel like a lot of Congress people's job. Members of Congress's job is to kind of be those the files anyway. So, you know, there's only a few people who are hopefully willing to step up and really fight the fight this time. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Henry Rogers has the piece up right now at the Daily Caller, dailycaller.com. It's a tremendous in-depth piece. We haven't even highlighted half of what's in this story. So make sure you check it out. Henry Rogers, thank you so much for stopping by, as always. Really appreciate it.
Jason, thank you so much. Have a good one.
You as well. Now this.
The interview.
It turns out that two local mayors wrote to Chinese President Xi Jinping, and they actually got a response. This was, as we just mentioned, a letter that was sent on behalf of the cities about the Beijing Olympics. But there's some controversies around it. Joining me on the line is one of the mayors who was a recipient of a letter back, Steilacoom Mayor Dick Meary. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be on. Thank you.
So your letter, we just talked about it on air. Your letter was basically just sort of a building of a bridge, it would seem. The controversy, however, is obviously that there is a genocide that's going on as a result of this Chinese president's, you know, quote unquote, leadership. Why wasn't that mentioned?
Well, when you're welcoming somebody to their new year and saying good luck on the Olympics, you don't have to politicize it. You know, I wouldn't expect if they were writing to me, somebody like that, say, by the way, your country is doing this, you're doing that. You know, that's up to the politicians. You know, when it comes to the Olympics, no different than 1980 when I think Jimmy Carter made a mistake of boycotting the Soviet Olympics. I think and then they boycotted us in 1984. I want to take politics out of sports. You know, I don't think athletes that go over there should be protesting against one government or another, or protesting against their nation. Or I think athletics are, this is the time when we can have fun and break bread and be human beings together. And I know what's going on in China. I know they have some huge challenges and, you know, but,
challenges, right? These are human rights abuses. They are murdering people.
Okay. You know, that's what's been, I've read about it and I read about it, you know, and I would hope that the people at the highest levels are voicing their concerns.
But do you get why there's controversy around this? Because and I hear your point, right? You're saying that this shouldn't be political. The Olympics shouldn't be political. That I think is a fair point. However, you didn't have to write him a letter. The relationship, with all due respect to both Steilacoom and Tacoma, the relationship between the United States and China is not going to hinge upon those letters. So
correct.
So I guess do you understand why there's some pushback?
No, because I am trying to be cordial. We have a sister city relationship with a city over in Hainan province in China. We have been doing cultural exchanges with students. The students going, our students going over there. Their students coming over here. You know, you know. At the highest levels, they can fight it out. At the lowest levels, we can be nice to each other and hopefully break bread and maybe cure the ills of cure the ills of the world at the lowest levels. You know, yeah, I'm just the mayor of a little town of 6,500 people, all 2 square miles, and just being nice to the my Chinese counterparts who hopefully are going to be nice to us. You know, and maybe my little gesture, my little nice little letter makes a little bit of a difference. I don't know. I'm as small than a pimples on a elephant's butt, you know.
So. Sure, and you would win many awards and get lots of praises if your letter was able to stop the genocide that's going on there with the Uyghurs. But obviously, unfortunately, that's not the case. And you know, again, I think especially Republicans expect a little bit harder line with China. The National Republican Party, the State Republican Party, all do that. And this is definitely, even though I know your intent, it was a little surprising, I guess. I expect this from Tacoma Mayor Victoria Woodards. I don't expect this from you.
Well, you know, and I'm also following in a 20-year relationship we've had with China. Started with Mayor Ron Lucas, who was close friend, my mentor before he passed away and handed the reins to me back in April of last year. So I'm just trying to continue that strong relationship that the Town of Steilacoom has with China. I've never visited there. I hope to go visit sometime in the next year or two. You know, it's one place my military 22 years, I never got to visit. Actually, I've been to Taiwan, but I haven't never been to the People's Republic of China. So it's just being nice, just, you know, trying to make the world a little bit happier and peaceful, maybe through sports and through student-to-student exchanges. So
last question then for you, because I think that this is a fair one, even though I think it's going to sound a little dismissive almost, but it's not my intent. Is there something that a leader of a country can do that would be above you wanting to be nice? Because if it's not an involvement in a genocide, what would it be? My assumption is you would not write a friendly letter to Adolf Hitler.
Right. I think I would not be as nice if all of a sudden I heard tomorrow that the People's Republic of China had invaded Taiwan. That would make me to the point where I would not want to ever go there, and I would probably not have any dealings with them when they start, invading other countries, you know. And I know Uyghurs, the situation over there is not a good one. Don't know the complete reasons why they're doing what they're doing, but it's everybody has their opinion on that, and I know people accusing Israel of genocide, and there's been people have accused us of stuff the way we've treated Native Americans. I don't believe those are true, but there's people that say,
But isn't that the point? Because, and I'm glad you said that, because obviously Israel is not committing genocide. Anti-Semites make that point, and that's why we don't take it seriously. But we do know, as a matter of fact, that China is committing genocide against the Uyghurs. We flatly know that. On top of that, they are, a geopolitical foe of the United States. Their involvement in hacking and stealing our intellectual property is at all-time highs. We're obviously dealing with spying situation coming from them as well. So there's stuff that's factual that you acknowledge is happening, right? I mean, you acknowledge that the Uyghurs are victims of a genocide.
Yeah, they're being persecuted. I agree with that. And they have been highly persecuted.
The threat of Taiwan independence is obviously real as well, and China doesn't want Taiwan to be independent. So you're saying that, and I know you don't mean it in this way, or I hope you're not meaning it in this way, you're saying that a genocide effectively isn't serious enough, but going into Taiwan and taking over the land and really imposing its will is?
Yeah, I haven't read how many Uyghurs have been killed, or I know they're in concentration camps. I know they're being persecuted.
Bad. Yeah.
But to say that, how many have died at the hands of the government, I don't know. But genocide is a pretty, pretty strong word to say that they're trying to eliminate the whole race of people. And so, and that's the word genocide and persecution, there's a big gap between the two. So, I don't know if I would completely say that what's happening over there is an attempted genocide by the People's Republic of China.
They've killed
what
millions
doing is,
or have disappeared them.
I don't think they've killed a million people. So
where did they go?
I don't know. Who knows? They're probably in camps. They're probably dispersed. I don't know.
Okay, so but let's go down the path of they're in camps. Okay, they haven't been killed. They're in camps. Is that not enough for you to say that this is more than just persecution? I mean, that's a human rights violation. I think you agree with that.
Yeah. Again, I'm not going to get into what should be the purview of the State Department and our relationships with China.
Okay.
At my level, it's all about being, trying to heal wounds and be as friendly as we can. Hopefully continue with our cultural exchanges. hopefully at the people level, we can do some healing and maybe set continue good examples on how a country and a people should behave.
Okay, fair enough. And by the way, you're willing to come on the show. I don't even think we bothered to reach out to Victoria Woodards, who has never agreed to come on our show, except for that one time, and then she bailed at the last minute. So we do appreciate you coming on. Silicon Mayor Dick Murray, thank you so much for stopping by. Really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason. Bye-bye.
Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story and joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
So we got the news yesterday that Jeff Zucker is out over at CNN. And it turns out there's a whole bunch more to the story. On top of that, I am personally concerned about the publicist for CNN and Jeff Zucker, Brian Stelter. Where is he going to go? What's going to happen to him? I'm concerned. So joining me on the line to help figure all of this out is Joe Concha. He is the media columnist over at The Hill and a Fox News contributor. Joe, welcome to the show.
I got to correct you already, Eric. I'm here to fact check.
Uh-oh.
All right. You said that Brian Stelter, who is the chief senior media correspondent for CNN, you also called him the head of PR?
Is he not the head of PR, Brian Stelter?
Oh, no. That is correct. But you forgot the other titles is what I'm saying, all right?
Yeah.
That's the bias of omission,
fine.
Right?
Fine. You're
Mr.
technically
Stelter
correct.
Also runs the opposition research department at CNN, right, along with Oliver Darcy. And then he also, on top of PR and on top of being the host of Reliable Sources and on top of being the chief media correspondent, he also... Oh, there was another job, I'm telling you. There's Oppo Research. Oh, Crisis Management. Crisis Management. Yeah, so imagine holding all those titles and being so craptastically horrible at them. I mean, it's impressive on some level, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, especially because, you know, all the news now is that this was always an open secret, that Jeff Zucker was having this relationship with this vice president. But now we're actually getting a little bit more information. Can you take us through a little bit about what we found out?
Oh, boy. All right. Well, the turmoil and tumult at CNN has reached Game of Thrones levels now, right? Because you had today an internal meeting with the Warner Media CEO. Warner Media basically owns Time Warner, or I'm sorry, CNN, at least for now. And here you had anchor Jake Tapper, who no one does pious condescension quite like Jake. He said in this internal meeting... He called Chris Cuomo today a terrorist who was holding the network hostage. And that's kind of consistent with CNN's reportage about conservatives, right? Like, everybody's a terrorist, but now Chris Cuomo's the enemy, so he's a terrorist. Also called Cuomo the bad guy that, you know, they're going after the wrong person here. He's the bad guy, as if Jeff Zucker somehow is the good guy. So there's a lot of people upset that Zucker was forced out the door. But remember, there's a business aspect to this as well, Jason, right? I mean, think about it this way. They're down 90% from the same exact date last year in terms of audience. Now, that means if you took 10 people who were in a room watching CNN on February 3rd, 2021, 9 have now left the room.
Exactly.
And if you follow, I used to write about sports, and if you had a manager or a coach who was losing games at this sort of clip where you're getting beat by, say, Fox News, for example, 4 or 5 times your audience, I mean, there's no reason to keep this person around, particularly when the credibility integrity of the network is completely in the crapper as well. So they're not trusted. Nobody's watching them. So, yeah, find an excuse to let go of Jeff Zucker. So why don't we say, hey, he was having a relationship with somebody else at the network who's an executive and he didn't tell anybody about it. That's against the rules. He's got to go. Of course no one believes that. There's so much more to this, and more is now coming out.
Yeah, and Rolling Stone just put out some additional information basically saying that it was Zucker who was also advising Andrew Cuomo. So it wasn't just Chris Cuomo. They gave him talking points on, you know, responding to President Trump at the time, criticizing the governor. You know, that actually is a scandal.
Yeah. I mean, think about this, right? A network president of an alleged news organization, right, and his girlfriend are coaching a sitting governor on how to best attack the sitting president at the time on his handling of COVID at the height of a deadly pandemic, right? They actually talk about activist journalism. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to tell me that the person who sits right outside of Zucker's office in Brian Stelter didn't know about this in any way, shape, or form? I can't wait for the discovery period, because Chris Cuomo is not a pleasant person. I've dealt with him directly before. And you get on his wrong side, that's a side that, you know, you basically just throw away the number and hope he never calls, because they're outside of Tapper, he's the most thin-skinned person in the business. He is going to come with, because he was friends with Zucker, remember. So he's going to come with texts and emails, and he's saying, you know what? Fine, you fire me, you don't pay me, I'm taking this Titanic down with me, right? Like Zeus, except from underwater, and he's going to take down not just Zucker in this case, but he didn't like Stelter as well. And anybody else he felt aided Zucker in his departure is going to be gone, and you could save the tape on that one, Jason.
Joe Concha joining me on the line. He is the media columnist over at The Hill, and of course you see him pretty much every day, multiple times a day sometimes on Fox News.
That's true.
I'm a little jealous on that part. So tell me
well,
this.
Well, you're dumb enough to do the mornings like I am. I'm like, oh, there's Jason waking up. And you're on the West Coast, right?
Oh, so, I know. It's very early
sometimes.
What
are you getting up at, like 1 o'clock in the morning?
Oh, well, if I'm doing Fox and Friends first, which I almost always regret just from my sleep pattern position, I love the show. I love everyone there. But that's me up at like 2 a.m., or sometimes a little bit earlier than that, or a little later, I guess. I do in the mornings when I'm doing Faulkner Focus. That's always super easy. When I'm doing Varney and Company, that's easy. I'm already
like
up.
Eight, yeah,
for me, that's super. That's when I'm already up. It's just those first.
But not to go to Inside Baseball. Do you have your own home studio, or you have to go to a studio? Or
I go to a studio, and it's very close to me, so it's actually not that bad. It used to be much further, but they have since moved, so it's actually very convenient for me. It's better
to
than having.
Here we get off. I got a guy.
Oh, you know a guy who's got a van.
No. A guy who put a studio in my basement that takes up very little room. I'm sitting in it right now, and maybe 10 feet. I got a camera. I got a big TV behind me, and it goes through the internet, and you're off and running.
We will connect.
We'll talk after.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So answer this, and this is, I don't know if this is inside, but do you think things would be a little bit different for both Zucker and even Stelter if they weren't so high and mighty about their positions? Because they pretend all the time that they are, in fact, serious journalists and CNN is a serious news organization, when it very clearly isn't. I would not be shocked to learn that MSNBC was involved in helping political figures on the left, and I probably wouldn't get all that outraged, because I'm like, well, yeah, of course, that's what they do. They're open about it.
Yeah, that's why you never hear MSNBC sucks chants at your average Trump rally, right? It's always CNN, because they really try to sell it. And I think they genuinely believe it, that they are the facts first network that's objective, that's speaking truth to power, and they really have no bias. They will swear up and down that that's the case. And people say, well, you work for Fox, what about them? I would say, all right, and I'll challenge you on this. You tell me who is the Brett Baer at CNN, right? You tell me who the Harris Faulkner is at CNN, or the Martha McCallum, or the Peter Doocy, for that matter, that's asking, you know, good questions at these White House press briefings. So the news side, I think, of Fox News is very strong, and we have an opinion side, yes, but it's like a newspaper. So when you watch Tucker Carlson, I'm pretty sure you're watching an opinion at that point, or Hannity, for that matter. But yeah, think about what Stelter said last week about Joe Rogan. He said, you think about major newsrooms like CNN, they have health departments and desks and operations that work very hard in verifying information on COVID-19, and then you have talk show stars like Joe Rogan, who just wing it, who make it up as they go along. They should be trusting us over him right now. Oh, really? You want to go out back and look at your Russia reporting over the last 4 years? I mean, that's the end of it. And then look what Zucker was doing the entire time, and Chris Cuomo, and coaching his brother or coaching his friend, if it's Zucker, to Andrew Cuomo. I mean, this finishes them, in my opinion. I'm writing a column right now. It's called The Collapse of CNN, and I usually have long titles. I'm leaving it at that, because I don't think they ever recover from this unless they fire basically everybody.
Does Stelter survive this? Does he get fired? Or is he given some extra points because he did his job?
It depends on how far Chris Cuomo goes. Oh, right. Yeah, good point. Chris Cuomo goes in terms of if they don't pay him, then Cuomo comes with the receipts and shows all the texts and emails showing Stelter was just as complicit in helping Zucker coach Cuomo, for example, or 100 other different things that have nothing to do with journalism. And again, Liberty Media, which takes over, and John Malone, I have a feeling they watch a guy like Brian Stelter and says, okay, this is the problem with our network right now, even more than Chris Cuomo, and that's that.
Yeah, they're going to have to clean ship. I look forward to your next column on the death of CNN. I really can't wait. Again, you can read all of his work over at The Hill, but also over at Fox News, foxnews.com, where he is also a contributor. Joe Concha, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
This was a fun first day, Jason. We'll do it again.
Absolutely. Now this.
All right, man.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
Unfortunately, there is a very clear move towards censorship. We've seen it coming for a while. This is not new. It didn't start with Joe Rogan. It didn't start with To Kill a Mockingbird. We've seen this movement grow from the left most recently, the last several years, all over holding positions that they disagree with. Now, to be clear, the right did this kind of censorship. It was slightly different. It had to do with artistic expression. It had to do with artistic expression, as you saw in movies or on TV and in music. And by the way, it wasn't just purely Republicans. There were Democrats at the time. Al Gore's, what was it, Tipper Gore? Was pushing that as well. But I mean, it was part of this sort of, I don't know, cultural anger coming from some folks on the right. They went after Glee, for example, because it had gay characters. They went after rap music to the point of wanting to censor content that, again, expressed positions and ideas, revolting ones, but protected speech nevertheless. Now we've seen this movement come from the left. They're going after people, not because of their expression as it relates to their art, but because they hold different positions than they do. And we know that if you don't agree with the position of someone on the left, at least in the progressive wing, they want to silence you rather than actually debate you. And that's what you're seeing happening right now with Joe Rogan. Spotify is under a lot of pressure to pull the plug on him. I don't think they will at this point. They haven't given any indications really that they will, but they are under increasing pressure. You got what? Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young getting back together. Also, they can pull their content now from Spotify. I don't know how many people are going to Spotify for that. And I don't know if, you know, any individual artist can really destroy Spotify. Spotify can't, though, exist if it doesn't guarantee that they're not going to censor their big name podcasters. Now, you know, when you've got, what's his name, Harry, Prince Harry and the fake Duchess, when you have them threatening to you know, leave or show some sort of anger when they're making basically $1 million a minute for content there, even they have to be assured that they're not going to be censored, right? They might not like what Joe Rogan is saying and they want to go after Joe Rogan, but they don't want to be censored. They want some sort of creative editorial freedom. All podcasters who sign up with Spotify will want that. And I have to imagine that even though they don't think it could happen to them, it very clearly could. We've used the quote over and over and over again on this show. I hope you know it by now. Imagine the power to censor in the hands of your worst enemy. Now, this isn't the traditional kind of censorship that the government is getting involved in, although I would argue that the Biden administration putting this kind of pressure on content providers to do something about content it disagrees with or doesn't like, or even does think, even if they do think it is fake and wrong or whatever it happens to be, conspiratorial, I do think that that crosses the line. However, no one thinks it's going to happen to them until it happens to them. And then all of a sudden, when it happens to them, they call out the folks who are trying to silence them. They are the victims then. But when they're the ones doing the victimizing, well, no, we're supposed to pretend that they're heroes. Now, Tulsi Gabbard, former Congresswoman Democrat from Hawaii, was on with Tucker Carlson last night. And I thought she made some really good points about the threat to the First Amendment.
It is yet the latest indicator about the real danger that we're facing as a society right now in this country, is that this fundamental freedom guaranteed to every one of us as Americans, this freedom of speech, is being threatened. People are being intimidated. Their financial security is being threatened. They are being censored or being intimidated into censoring themselves. This freedom is the fabric of our Constitution. And the fact that this is what we're facing, that the powers that be decide, well, if we don't like the things that you're saying, then we will find a way to silence you and censor you. This is something that every single American should be afraid of, because we need to have the confidence in America that we can express ourselves, that we have the freedom to speak without the threat of punishment looming over us. That right there is literally the difference between living in a democracy or living in a dictatorship.
Now, I often hear really bad faith arguments from some folks on the left who will try to engage in a debate on this. They'll say, I thought Republicans, you know, were all about the marketplace of ideas, and this is just the marketplace speaking. But it's not the marketplace speaking. It's not the marketplace speaking. It's people in positions of power who are punishing a business for supporting a voice that they disagree with. And they are using their financial power to try to shut someone else up. If Joe Rogan was out there trying to silence others who call him out, that would be very objectionable. Yeah, CNN would call it out. They would say, oh, I can't believe this podcaster, Joe Rogan, is trying to get Spotify to drop Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young music. How dare he? That's an abuse. Because they disagree with him politically, even though politically, he's not a conservative. Joe Rogan isn't a conservative. He's kind of all over the place. And like a lot of folks, they've leaned a little bit more towards the right, at least in response to COVID, because they've seen how out of control the left has been. And that's an important part of this conversation. It's not like Joe Rogan is some hardcore conservative. He's not alt-right. I remember him talking positively about wanting to support Bernie Sanders. Yeah, it turns out Republicans don't want to support Bernie Sanders. They don't have a lot. We don't have a lot to say about him. But Joe Rogan did. Joe Rogan calls out stuff as he sees it. He talks to people with whom he either disagrees or is told that they shouldn't be put in front of a microphone. For a lot of us who are just naturally curious, for a lot of us who don't like to be told what we're supposed to think or do or say, that pushes us towards doing and thinking and saying the things that you don't want us to. And that's part of the appeal of Joe Rogan, who brings in 14 million podcast subscribers or listeners per episode. That's insane. That is insane. But he gets that for a reason. And I sure hope that people continue to follow him if they already did, if they already supported him, because he needs it.
The Last Rant.
And with that, let's just give a nice little reminder, because I don't know how often we think about it in those terms. Any one of the voices you listen to or read, any one of us could be out of a job because of some disingenuous, disturbing assault on speech, on ideas, on expression. Any one of us. And so if you like the content that we put out, whether it's me or Joe Rogan, it's on you to also support us, not just reading and listening, but hey, we've got sponsors. That means if you're in the market for anything that our name is attached to or promoting, make sure you're going to them and make sure that you let them know that you heard about them from our shows. So if Joe Rogan has a sponsor for some, you know, pillow company, not my pillow, I don't think they do that. And you're looking for a new pillow, then you do that. If for me, you are looking to lose weight, okay, go to 3010weightlossforlife.com. It's a great sponsor. You tell them where you heard that. Say I pitched it. Go to alpineclean.com. Get your carpets clean. Another great sponsor. There's so many of them out there. And again, it's not just for me. It's not just for Joe Rogan. You appreciate a lot of content on the radio, online. So you got to do a little bit more to ensure that we aren't such easy sitting ducks. Because you know what? If Joe Rogan didn't have the money attached to him, if he wasn't making the money for Spotify as he would, it might be really, really easy for a company to just give in and say no to him and silence him.